WPRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lennon. It's good to be back on again with John McMurtry. John is a favorite of this program. Have been on with John for a few months. Well, I wasn't able to be on myself for a couple of months, but I'm back now. Missed last week. Had a little matter to take care of health-wise, but hopefully that's in the, heading in the right direction. And I'm delighted to be back on again this week. Well, whether it's last week or the week before or this week or next week or a month from now, the same issues are the big ones. We've got the Ukraine thing going on. I put out an article yesterday about the illusory ceasefire, some ceasefire. There's been shelling by the Kiev military practically on a daily basis. The people who live in the area say the shelling never really stopped, not as intense as it was, but it never stopped. We've got Obama's wars against Iraq. Well, in Iraq, and definitely against Syria, and very serious stuff. And I began an article this morning. I'll finish it today, maybe hopefully get it out today, that I see that apparently I think what's coming is the introduction of ground troops, despite Obama's disclaimer to the opposite. He always says one thing, he does another, and I quote people like Daniel Ellsberg, who believes there isn't a high-level person in the Pentagon who doesn't believe that what's going on can be handled by air power alone, and he compares what's going on to Bush's Afghan and Iraq wars, to the Vietnam War that he's very familiar with, Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers, of course, and he sees the same thing happening now in Iraq and Syria. John, I'm always eager to hear your comments on these issues and any other.
Well, it's whether we're talking Africa or Europe or the Middle East or Latin America or the Ukraine, there's always the master trend. It's quite, there's an intervention over a phony emergency and a designated enemy that has to be stopped no matter what, always. And, and it goes in obviously different directions. It always seems to fail on the face of it. But what it doesn't fail on the face of what is the objective over and over again on the level of historical fact, and that is just destroying the society involved. You destroy the society involved. That's basically what ISIS, which is a construction of this same system, does too. We just have a moving chaos, which, as you know, I diagnose as a metastasizing cancer system. But, you can hardly believe it. You know, it'll be the mass destruction weapons of Iraq, or it'll be the genocidal program of the dictator Gaddafi. It'll be Assad's chemical weapons used on his own people. Even when these things are completely false, even when they're exposed as completely false, as Seymour Hersh did on the chemical weapons used supposedly by Syria on its own people. That was a kitchen sarin constructed by the so-called, the so-called Free Syrian groups, which are in fact just jihadists, which are hired to do the job, and that's all been proved. But it doesn't make any difference. They just go on saying he's used chemical weapons against his own people, and now we're returning to Syria again. They're finding, as you well know, they're finding a pretext to go back into Syria, which they had lost. I mean, they had lost the war, as they usually do, because it's, evil forces don't in the end prevail, and knowledge does. But they're going back into Syria again. And so we have this common pattern of society destruction going on and on and on again. We have it in Ukraine up north. It's almost like directly north. It's all moving east. There's a whole U.S. Backed movement going east, out of the European Union, into Ukraine, towards Russia, and then, of course, at the south end, they're into Syria, and then they're trying to move east from Syria. They've already taken, destroyed Iraq. They've already subjugated the surrounding countries. Turkey seems to be on their side. Actually, a really rather evil neoliberal government in its own right. And we have bombings. But bombings don't seem to be saving the people of who are being invaded right now by ISIL. By the way, ISIL, you know, they've changed the name from ISIS to ISIL. I don't know whether you were aware of the reason for it, but it's rather amusing. ISIS is a very well-known literary name taken from you know, all that stuff. And so they changed it to ISIL. Actually, that's a good...
I think there is at least one company, maybe more than one, by the name of ISIL. And this is a company that desperately needs to change its name. But imagine having a business, and your business is called ISIL.
There might be sort of copyright suits. But, of course, those don't do well because everything, as we see, including the civil rights of Americans, quickly are subjugated to the corporate rights of seizing other people's markets and resources, especially oil and fossil fuels, abroad. So what I see is the same old story over and over and over and over again, and now we're getting a repeat show with ISIL. And it's how do people stay with it? How do they continue to be in this state of suspended disbelief following these preposterous stories that are told to them? They're the very same plot again and again. There's an evil enemy. The evil enemy must be conquered. The evil enemy, therefore, must be bombed. The evil, you know, then the evil enemy gets bombed. Not really. What happens is that the civilians all around get bombed, as is going on in Ukraine. They've leveled Luhansk. Luhansk has been leveled. That's the description of the BBC News. Luhansk has been leveled. 350,000 people have had to flee for their lives. Over a million now have, you know, it's just exponentially risen, have had to flee for their lives in eastern Ukraine. You never hear those figures. Those figures are greater than what ISIS is doing or ISIL is doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Not even mentioned.
Not just Lugansk, surrounding areas in Donetsk. Donetsk is where a lot of fighting is going on right now, John.
Where the epic center has been throughout, of course, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that general Southeast Asian region, Mariupol is another area that's being contested. But the only thing that, of course, it never comes out in the U.S. media, but the only thing the people, that the freedom fighters are what I call them, because that's what they are, self-defense force freedom fighters, all they want is real democracy. They simply want the rights that everybody deserves universally. They're not trying to overthrow a government. They don't want a fascist government. They want a democratic government. They want some local autonomy.
Yeah.
Just like in America or in Canada, you've got the provincial governments. In America, you've got state governments. You've got city governments. You've got small town governments. They want the same thing. They don't want some bureaucrat in Kiev telling them what to do or installing an oligarch to be the governor of their territory, which is what goes on.
What's like particularly ironic in the case of Ukraine and the Russian-speaking eastern part of it is that it's very much like Quebec in Canada, and where you have a division of language and you have a division of culture. And how do you deal with that? Well, there's been conflicts in Canada now for hundreds of years over that issue. And Canada has managed it by exactly what the Donetsk region and the new republics were started with, and everybody started with, is we've got to have a federalist system. And the federalist system means you devolve powers to the provincial or local level that are very, very important to them. And they become self-governing, but within a federation, and you protect their language rights. Like in Canada, the Quebec language, French, is protected everywhere. You can speak in that language in the court in any part of the land, and it has a whole set of... Now, this is an historical achievement. And so we now have a quiet situation of a country that has stayed together, and it stayed together in exactly the same circumstances of language division and cultural division at the base, and the worry about the whole language being basically eliminated, erased from people's culture. Well, that was the first thing this fascist coup, and it was a fascist coup led by fascists, as you know, the right sector and Svoboda that are related to the Nazis, and that did a whole series of sniper murders that led to the coup d'etat, all blamed on the government, of course. And that's what they started right from the beginning. We want a federalist system, and we want our language rights protected. What Canada has had all along, but Canada's government, which is a kind of a crypto-fascist neoliberal government for the first time in the history of our country, has gotten in charge, and he's backed by big oil out of Alberta. And, of course, he's a warmonger, and all his people are warmongers, and they're just... They're treating the whole thing the same way as they used to scream about Russia in the old Soviet Union days. Just ignorant bluster and warmongering coming from them, so that the very thing that Canada, for example, might have done and probably was best positioned to do of all the countries around was say, hey, we've had that same situation, and this is how we managed it. And it took a long historical evolution, and it's worked. That idea has never, even in Canada, that idea has never even had a peep inside the media, although it's self-evident. They don't even want, the media will not even go so far. And you know what you always say about the New York Times. I read the New York Times too. It's just the same as what the Globe and Mail is. It's even just the same as what we find in the Guardian Weekly in terms of warmongering 2 minutes hate for Russia and Putin at every turn, always against the evidence, always without evidence, or in fact in complete contradiction to the evidence, which itself never comes out. And so you almost see like a sleepwalk in accordance with this meta program that has nothing to do with reality, but that has to do with one thing, an expansion east of the EU, now attached to the U.S. corporate globalization program that eliminates all rights of peoples and eliminates all social infrastructures and turns everything into a priceable good to turn and export and then move on to the next looting basin. They're even doing it now, Steve. I don't know why you've been following this, but it could almost be a topic this morning, but it isn't going to be. But China in Hong Kong, I don't know whether you know, wherever there's trouble, you can be sure the U.S. covert and overt forces are in there.
Oh,
you know, the
no
Endowment
question.
For Democracy and USAID and everybody flooding money to the insurrectionaries, you know, to propagate all sorts of propaganda, and they to meet with the councils. All of this has been happening inside Hong Kong. Hong Kong is another one of the constructions. Now, unfortunately, what they always do, like a cancer will always take that part of the body that is least immune protected, that is inert and doesn't respond, and it'll exploit that. And that's what they always do. They'll find some lesion going on inside the body politic, and then that'll just be exploited and exploited and exploited until it caused a civil war or civil war conditions, until they've destroyed the country. Why? What is the objective about destroying the country? Well, that's the nature of what a cancer system does. But it also does, because the cancer system has to feed its own exponential reproduction, and it does so by feeding on the remains, because the remains are just, you know, basically they're turned into territories completely dependent and helpless and ruined. And then you can grab what you want for them before moving on to the next destabilization area that you're going to do it to. And so we just have right in front of us now, and you notice it's all sweeping east. I mean, China's feeling the same encirclement that Russia's feeling, that everybody, that Venezuela, of course, has been feeling for years. is they're at work everywhere, surrounding, penetrating, destabilizing, and pushing into civil war conditions so the whole place collapses, comes apart, and then you can feed on it. And if they come back again, then you do it to them again, as it did in Syria. Syria's war had been won. I mean, it was interesting to see Iran and Iran's own understanding of the situation, and they're not by any means optimists. They declared the war in Syria over a couple of months ago, saying, "We, you know, the Syrian people have won there, and it's finished." That's when ISIL moved out of Syria because it hadn't worked. ISIL was hired, as you know, to destabilize Syria, and to destabilize Syria by the standard method these days. You have a jihadist movement. All the jihadist movements, which people I don't know out there listening, all the jihadist movement have been financed and orchestrated by the U.S. itself, beginning in Afghanistan, and even before Afghanistan, and then, of course, Iraq, and then, of course, in Somalia, then, of course, in, you know, wherever they move, they're using jihadist forces of their own orchestration, their own armament, their own financing. They never do anything about cutting off the finances. All this, ISIL was created to overthrow Syria's government or its earlier version of Al-Qaeda because it's a group within Al-Qaeda that has become independent. And, it started in Syria to overthrow a government there, and of course it turned the whole place into a civil war. It was driven out of Syria so that it just continued to be funded and went into Iraq to take over, and then it wants to take over the whole region. I mean, that whole, what's sort of new about the ISIL for Syria and Lebanon and the Levant, that whole area, what is unusual about it in a way is that they're not there just to sow chaos. They're there to take over the territory. They are there to actually institute governance. That's the move. That's the new move that has happened with ISIL. And they will go around, and again, with a very familiar process in history, they'll go along with the land clearances, with the beheadings and the terror and so forth. Just clear the land of all the people, because you're going to take it over, and you're going to take it over like they've taken over the oil fields, and then they become very rich, not only from the Western forces that are feeding them, the Gulf forces, and the U.S. and even Turkey are feeding them all, arming them all, and saying we've got to stop this. It's all insane. It's like a surreal dream, except that it all managed to do what the real and unspoken objective is, which is destroy the societies themselves. Because always it began with a secular-leaning, socialist-leaning society that had achieved, whether we were talking Egypt or whether we're talking any of the countries I've mentioned before except in Africa, the whole of Middle East were secular socialists. That's the real target. Not only do you eliminate them, but you eliminate even more importantly all the social infrastructures of health, of education, and of life security, of housing. You eliminate all that by destabilizing and destroying the country, as happened with the Soviet Union itself, and then you go in and you loot it, and then you move on to the next. And that is always the outcome. The really sinister thing that's happening, and this has taken me a while to kind of join the dots, is that what ISIL is going after, what it takes as its proper territory, is almost coextensive with Greater Israel. It's the same when ISIL is Greater Israel underneath the packaging. ISIL is actually being defended by Israel cannon on the Golan Heights area. They're right up against the border of Israel, and they're being defended against any enemy to them against the Israel border. The Israel, the greater Israel vision, which of course, you know, and I've talked about this often enough in this program, which of course, it goes back to the Old Testament. The very notion of the promised land is a right to genocide and destroy all peoples that stand in the way of what you, what your tribal God has promised is yours. And that's really, that's the right of the promised land. When and you so, you know, you're everything. Going to eliminate all those people. There were eight or nine peoples there, Jebusites, Hebusites, Hittites, and so forth. And they eliminated them all, and the Lord said, you shall exterminate them. We have the same program under the same right. It's our promised land. You know, and everybody agrees, oh yes, it's their promised land. And nobody realizes, well, a promised land means the genocide of all other peoples occupying it. So ISIL is a perfect weapon inside this. The most sad, it's come out through the papers that have been released by Snowden, ISIL's leader, Baghdadi, notice the name, by the way, notice the karmic uprising that has come out of that whole Iraq war crime, perhaps the greatest of the century. You know, just the bombing, just bombing the hell out of Baghdad for evening entertainment, destroying all their civil infrastructure, their water supplies, their electricity, and so forth, day after day after day, for no reason whatsoever. This guy's name is Baghdadi. This guy who's so, you know, the next caliph. That next caliph called Baghdadi, who's arising out of the rage that is in that country. It's just the primeval rage of being destroyed externally and absolutely unjustly by the American war machine with its allies. Its leader, Baghdadi, has been trained by Mossad. I don't know whether you knew that.
Mossad is very much involved in all of this, and very much involved in training these extremist Islamic fighters. And Israel, besides giving them protection from Golan, treats their wounded in Israeli hospitals. Israeli weapons have been found in Syria. I mean, Israel is up to its ears in the conflict in Syria. But of course, America and Israel partner in all of this imperial stuff going on in the region, John. And Israel's goal are rather modest compared to America's. It only wants a chunk of Jordan and Syria and Egypt and Lebanon. Where
yeah,
America's
Egypt,
goal?
They want from the Tigris. They want from the Euphrates down to the Nile.
Down to the Nile. Yeah. And in Lebanon, up to about 20 miles into the south, up to the Litani River, because of the valued water resources. Israel wants to get its hands on this water. I mean, any country in that region probably has a water problem. So if you can get your hands on an important supply, that's what you want. And Israel wants it. It had it for a number of years after the early 1980s war against Lebanon. And then around 1990, Israel finally gave up and pulled out. It was not doing too well. Had a lot of opposition in southern Lebanon. It's been a while since I've written about that.
They always lose in the end, but they don't really lose because the objectives have achieved. Divide, rule, destroy. And then you've got nothing. You can just loot it well.
Oh,
that's why when people say, well, you know, America's wars, they keep failing. They keep losing. They keep getting beaten out, even though they just outman in terms of killing machinery, anybody by 1,000 to 1. They keep losing. Well, they don't really lose for the real objective in mind, and that is to turn them all into territories that are helpless and under their control. And then up to a certain point, and that is well in place now, Israel's aim in this regard and the U.S.'s aim in this regard are one and the same. And so Mossad helped set up this ISIL group and its predecessors. Turkey and the Gulf states financed and armed and indeed gave it all these PR techniques, I think, come from Qatar. And they worked together to create ISIL. And then, you know, while you... things, you know, this group has turned, well, they were made that way, just as they were made that way in Afghanistan, and bin Laden himself is a product of the same schooling. And then they think, oh, well, now we can get back into Turkey by bombing our own ally, by bombing the very creature that we have made. And that's always the case, too, as it was with Saddam, is the U.S. and its allies, in this case we've just named them, and always with Britain, because Britain is even bigger in oil dependency than the U.S. on foreign oil dependency. They construct an enemy, as Saddam was constructed, as the ISIL itself is constructed. Then they use this as the justification for invading a country, to destroy the country, to get rid of the very person they have constructed as the enemy to begin with, but formerly their key ally. I mean, they did it with Noriega. Who haven't they done it with? They did it with bin Laden. They did, you know. This is, you know, it's a nice, easy circle. You ally with this fanatical force, now it's jihadists. You ally with a fanatical force, you arm it, you orchestrate it, you above all fund it. Even Hegel says, the money that they're getting is they have infinite money supplies, but they never go after the money supplies. They never go after the money supplies. They never go after the weapon supplies. They say, oh, well, I guess we've got a bomb them. It's such a fool's game that is being played in front of the people again and again. The media will never mention any of this underground facticity that grounds everything that's going on. It'll never be mentioned. And you just go around in a circle. Now you control both sides of the war, and you bomb whichever side is convenient for you. And in this case, bomb ISIL was convenient because ISIL was hired to destabilize Syria and its predecessor. Now we can go back into Syria after being defeated there.
Well, I think what America is doing in Syria, at least, is supporting ISIL, or I like to call them the Islamic State. Sometimes I use all three terms, ISIL, ISIS, and the Islamic State. They call themselves the Islamic State, but we all know, I think everybody is pretty familiar with them now. 6 months ago, nobody in America
heard of
these people, but everybody knows about them now.
How come it's going to take years and years of military involvement? They're already setting up a scenario for a permanent war against ISIL. ISIL just appeared on the scene in the last year or two, and it's a complete construction. It doesn't last longer than the money flow, the huge money flow that's coming from Saudi Arabia through weapons. It's all coming from the surrounding countries, either officially or unofficially, usually through rich individuals, and then the government turns a blind eye, including Turkey. How come Turkey's relationship with ISIL is so good? How come ISIL has never, with all the concern of the Islamic Party as a whole, and certainly as fundamentalists, is with Israel. You know, the continuous perpetual war crime of Israel and Palestine. Why hasn't one single Israeli target or person or individual or installation untouchable? Israel is untouchable. Why is nobody asking the question, why is Israel untouchable? Why is Turkey untouchable here? Turkey was touchable. They had some hostages, and that was settled overnight. They got all their hostages returned right away. Turkey's now sitting on its border with tanks in that place, latest place that's being invaded, Kolone. They're sitting with their tanks as the ISIS forces of doom, well-armed and vicious, using the beheading structure. By the way, Saudi Arabia beheaded 22 people within 3 weeks of ISIL beheading that American journalist. But, of course, all we ever hear about is how evil ISIL is for this beheading. And, well, Saudi Arabia is doing it as a matter of habit,
absolutely,
including for such things.
Saudi Arabia could teach the ISIL forces a trick or two, John. Saudi Arabia is notorious for this, and they even have a practice during prayer time. They have what's called whipping police. Anybody not praying during official praying times, if they're caught out on the streets, they can be flogged. Who ever heard of whipping police? But Saudi Arabia has them.
Yeah. I mean, they, you know, talk about. I mean, the barbarism is built into the American allies, built into the funding, built into the PR, built into the weapons, built into the habits of destroying people for nonconformity. It's a religion which never has had a reformation. I don't know whether just a little story to give you a sense of how that Islamic fanaticism is a part of a culture. I once was crossing a street in Beirut, which is the most, the most secularized, used to be the most secularized part of the whole Middle East. And I had my armor on, my beautiful wife, and a guy ran out with a gang, a big guy, and he threw a belt around my neck and tried to strangle me. And if I hadn't have been the kind of guy I was an elite athlete and so forth, well, I very quickly dealt with this guy, and then the gang fled, but he was going to strangle me. Why? Because my wife and I had our arms around each other. And that gives you a sense that even in the most secularized place of the Middle East, which used to be Beirut, you have a kind of an underlying Old Testament fanaticism that is still the religion because it really hasn't had a reformation. And that had been overcome. What happened to me there was an exception. I traveled through all the countries in the Middle East, all the way to India and beyond, and through Pakistan and so forth. So I have an experience of all of them. When I was there, and that's some years ago, the big thing that was going on was Arab socialism, secular Arab socialism. There were the fanatics, the Islamic fanatics and the jihadists and so forth, but they were an outlier group. They were not really part of the policy action or the understanding of what was going on in these countries. They were all into some form of socialism, including the Ba'ath Party of Iraq and Syria. And what the behind it all is the elimination of that, just as with the elimination of the Soviet Union and everything else. Anything that has a social infrastructure or something more basic than the market as the way that people feed themselves and have access to drinking water and access to home and access to education and so forth, anything that provides that for people, it could be El Salvador with the FMLN, it could be anywhere. That is, by its nature, the enemy to this system, because this system is just private, and has become most purely, merely exponential private money sequencing for corporate stockholders at the top, end of story, everywhere, for everything. It began by eliminating all social-based societies that had another system. That is still going on now. That is still the clearance principle. And then you use, nowadays, used to be death squads that weren't, like, especially in Latin America, but now you use jihadis. The jihadis did not exist before. The jihadis have been armed, have been financed, have been advised, have been directed from Afghanistan to the borders of Israel to ISIL. Have been deliberately constructed, led by the U.S. and its, especially the U.S., but also its allies. It's just This is the long game. Destroy any other system but the money sequence cancer system. They don't, of course, understand that diagnosis. But even if they did, I don't think it would make any difference. And if everything you see happen has been destroy any opposition to it. In fact, the method now is more completely destroy the very society that hosts it. so it is no longer possible again. Meanwhile, internally, what you're doing is destroying all those social infrastructure bases of the welfare state that, through privatization, through tax reductions, through waste on the military, through every method possible, you destroy it at home too. So now we're in a situation in Iraq. That was why Iraq was such a threat. Iraq had the best health programs in the Middle East. It had the best life security system in the Middle East. Saddam was sent in to wreck it. He was a CIA operative. He didn't succeed because it was so inbuilt into the culture. They, you know, I've been there, but I also have expert friends who have been doctors, you know, assisting Iraq during the bomb them back into the Stone Age and during the sanctions period, which killed 500,000 children deliberately. It's a genocidal operation. It's a genocidal operation. Why did they pick Iraq? Well, Iraq had strength militarily. Therefore, it's the first thing for Israel. Israel had two enemies it was afraid of, Iraq and Syria. Look what's happened. It's all turning around the Greater Israel Project in the back and covert background because they have, you know, basically the Israeli, whatever you want to call these people are warmongers, but they also have obviously infiltrated the U.S. Virtually every advisor, including, by the way, Victoria Nuland, is of Jewish background. And so that you have Israel within the U.S. itself. And always, they've done it to Israel too, always destroy the social state. And always now destroy the whole society so it has no chance of recovery. And if you don't succeed, go back and do it again, which is what's happening now with Syria under the pretext of ISIL, which has been constructed by the parties that are bombing it themselves. It's so, you wouldn't have believed it if it was in a story. It would just say, oh, no, that's too surreal. You know, that's too over the top. People would never go along with that. People wouldn't believe that. But they do over and over and over again. How can they possibly believe it? Because, of course, the mass media tell them nothing else but the opposite story throughout, the same story throughout. There's a bad guy out there, we got to get him. Therefore, we're going to have to bomb them. Therefore, the society is going to have to be destroyed. And never mention what sort of a society it was, like Libya is a perfect recent example. But Ukraine wasn't really well off. It had lost 60% of its GDP after the liberation by Western forces. And as you know, that Cold War was an effort basically to wipe out all socialism that had an instituted form. And it just kept on moving until now we have none left. And then anything that is left, we're going to wreck that too. And where does it stop? It's going towards Russia through Ukraine. It's trying to get into China through Hong Kong. It's almost succeeded in destroying Venezuela. It almost succeeded in destroying the whole of Latin America through the death squad military dictatorship system. But the people keep coming back. That's the amazing thing to me. They keep coming back. So they're going to have to do it again. And you wonder, when will people awake from this ruling group mind that has been instilled into them? It's like the Manchurian Candidate at a collective level. Remember that famous film where Lawrence Harvey is conditioned to do something when he's triggered by a certain stimulus, then he goes in to become a killing machine? We have this really happening at a collective level. All you got to do is blame someone that is a recognized enemy to the audience. I call it the ad adversarium fallacy in logic. All you got to do is that, divert all attention from what the reality onto that, never stop saying that, and you'll succeed. The people will go along with you. Enough people will go along with you. And those who don't are going to be abused. They're going to be rejected. They're going to be ostracized. They may even get killed. And this way, you sustain the Orwellian situation. And then all the while, like in as in Ukraine, I mean, you were saying there in a recent note, you were saying, you know, the Times, why they just keep, they keep going after Putin. But I, you know, I can't remember you were saying them going after any leader just endlessly and nonstop with no evidence. Never any evidence for it. And you thought it was the New York Times. Of course, it is the New York Times, which astonishes me because I've become a recent reader for sociological reasons, is that you have very intelligent book reviews. And then you go into the foreign affairs sections and articles, and it's like you're dealing with a moron. You're dealing with a social moron in all the stories. It's just like that there's two shifts. One is ordinary human intelligence that develops in accordance with facts and imagination. And then the other is just this closed, murderous program that is absolutely one-sided in its reporting and is moronic, you know, in the sense that it doesn't get anything actually as it is. So this goes on even in the Guardian Weekly, which is the only paper that I buy. I get the New York Times has been given to me. And the Guardian Weekly is a sort of well-known international sort of progressive paper. So, but it, here, inside, here's the headline of the whole weekly paper just recently. Inside Putin's paranoid world. And then they go on with a long article. There's nothing, no evidence whatsoever to support that allegation that is the blazing front page headline. Nothing. It's just the headline. And then another one that I just wrote a letter to is sucked into Putin's black hole of fear. And which I just sent you the title that I just sent the letter off yesterday, which I could read if you wanted. But it's just basically pointing out that, well, I'll just read the first sentence. The author seems to suffer from a bad case of reverse projection, and that's always the method. Reverse onto the enemy what you're doing yourself is the reason for attacking them. Then invert from, invert into yourself all virtue and all moral goodness as why you are the good and why the evil must be destroyed. So you have these reverse projections working both directions. Anyway, say reverse projection. Attributing to the designated enemy of the day the plots and actions of those attacking it. In this case, the enemy is Putin. It's not Assad or Chavez or Saddam or Gaddafi. But the duping strategy of creating an enemy to start a war run by a system of total lies most applies to those at war against it. Now, that was the charge that was being made about Putin, starting a war by running a system of total lies. They just project. That's... But those, and so then I go on to explain. In fact, the rising violence and war in Ukraine attributed to Russia has been led by the other side. The bloodiest and most heinous crimes of mass murder have been the firebombing of the House of Unions in Odessa by pro-Kiev gangs in March and in Mariupol on Victory Day over Nazis on May 9th. Both mass murders of scores of unarmed citizens which have been uninvestigated by Kiev authorities. These Nazi-style crimes have been followed by the war criminal shelling of bombing of Russian-speaking Eastern civilian centers, including schools and hospitals, by the Kiev regime, itself the product of a violent coup of an elected government financed and organized by the office of the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State, Victoria Nuland. Even the shooting down of the Malaysian passenger plane, MH17, long blamed on Russia, has increasingly pointed in hard evidence to another Kiev-hatched black op to incite NATO to attack Russia, which is basically the constant that they're trying to make happen.
John, by the way, Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State for European and European Affairs, and maybe I forget the other region, but two regions. She either is back in Kiev right now, John, or she's on her way there. And I can only imagine. I wrote about this in an article yesterday, very briefly, included it in my article on Ukraine. And I think because the Ukrainian military was so battered by the self-defense forces, imagine a guerrilla force defeating the army of a country, even though it's not a major military force for Ukraine, but still defeating, I mean, with tanks and artillery, and a guerrilla force literally battered them and defeated them. Well, they're regrouping, and the war didn't stop. It's just been postponed.
I think you're right, again. Steve. It's a holding action until they get all the NATO weapons and so forth.
Oh, yeah, I think she's there, John, plotting the next phase of the war.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're not going to read that in any publication, but I believe that's what it's all about, because when America goes to war, it doesn't just back off and say, oh, well, we'll just leave things the way they are. I mean, they just keep going. Anybody who remembers the Balkan Wars of the 1990s, it went on for a whole decade.
Yeah. And it destroyed there again Yugoslavia. I mean, that was a perfect example.
Absolutely, it's a perfect example. And the word Balkanized comes from what happened to Yugoslavia.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the whole thing. Divided into a bunch of helpless territories that you can do what you want with, and at the same time, Greater Israel was formed in the subterranean 3,000-year-old strategy.
It's so ugly, John, and literally, just in the post 9/11 era alone, millions of people have been killed by this, not just directly from war, but from all of the fallout from war in Afghanistan. Starvation, illness has taken countless numbers of people. Nobody knows the exact numbers. You can only guess. But the deprivation level in these countries that America destroyed is so extreme that people can't get enough food to eat. Many of them don't have homes. They can freeze to death in the wintertime. They don't get medical care. The life expectancy in these countries is awful. It just goes on and on and on. And this is all because of U.S. imperial rampaging. And what Israel does is a partner in this, and what I call the rogue EU allies or the rogue NATO allies.
Well, you know, as a philosopher and a scientist, which I've made my living at, the one thing you always ask yourself is, of any hypothesis you have, is what evidence disconfirms it? What evidence counts against this hypothesis, this pattern that we're both seeing here? And I can't find anything. And the same with 9/11 itself. What counts against the hypothesis of its being, simply put, an inside job? There's really no evidence to show what we're finding with horror to be the case. There's no evidence against it. There's only evidence for it. So it leads you to think, well, if only the people could understand. I mean, there's one of the greatest quotes from philosophy I know is from actually a Jewish guy, but he was kicked out of his Jewish church. Is Baruch Spinoza, and he said the highest human activity is understanding. And learning towards understanding is the only freedom. Now, he was kicked out of his.
Well, he was no ordinary guy, for sure, John.
But I mean, that to me is so wise. And then I would add, and knowledge is the only thing that is not destroyed. That's the long term pull of the human race. Is that the only thing that we seem to be able to hold on to is knowledge, as in the case of scientific knowledge. And so we fight this battle against the forces of literally mass murderous ignorance. And the extent to which they go, you know, the media go, that, you know, basically they're corporate money sequence vehicles, and then the states, the governments themselves are corporate occupied states. The reason the lengths to which they go to cover everything up that we're seeing, because you won't find anything of what we're saying to be found. I mean, it's to be found, and it's documented, but you're never going to find it in the mainstream media. The lengths to which they go to suppress it, to never allowing people to even see it, they just really have no clue, indicates the importance of its being believed. They know that if this stuff isn't believed, we don't have any, we don't have the hearts and minds. We can't go anywhere. The American people won't stand for it, or the Canadian people won't stand for it if they know. And so anything will be done to stop that from getting out. And that's why this program is so important, because basically every single thing we talk about is not to be found in the mass media of any form. And really, in a sense, on the one hand, it's very discouraging to think that things are so set against life-grounded truth and actually caring about the well-being of people's lives across borders, is that they go to such lengths to repress it, to stop it, to silence it. I just recently read a book review on Kissinger, his latest book, and just noticing that the word life, the word of life coordinates, people's food, their clothing, their homes, their environments, their whole life condition base, all the conditions required to take the next breath, none of it ever makes its way into consideration. It is life blind all the way down. And so ultimately I see our work as bringing out the life-grounded facts and the alternatives clearly, because everywhere else it's like people have been put to sleep. People are in a post-hypnotic trance of the system, lock-stepping along. But now things, I don't know, people, it doesn't seem to me that this bombing of ISIL, they had to make ISIL really, really bad and evil. They had to create a really, and this is all part of the plan, they had to make a really evil enemy that nobody could have any second doubts about, and more so, usually it's been an established force. But this is a new force, and it's archetypally evil in the sense of its mass murderous, maiming structure of action. And so now that'll get people on our side. Now people will know we have to bomb. We have to go back in and bomb. But I don't know how people... The thing is, the horror, the atrocities that they have committed make it an unambiguous enemy for the first time. And not only that, but they're bombing their own assets to get, in order to keep the story going that they're against ISIL as opposed to ISIL just being a creature. Well, it is our creature still, but it's our creature, it's our function to attack it and bomb it like Hussein was once such a creature. How do you think the American people are swallowing this latest one? I think the atrocity evil of ISIL is carrying the day.
It is done. And
you control both sides of the war.
I mean, it's a perfect way to enlist public support, but when you think about it, people are pretty stupid to fall for this. Talking about a few people being killed, no matter what the way, no matter how it happened, but you don't go to war because a few people were beheaded or shot or stabbed or tortured to death or whatever. You go to war to defend yourself. That's the only reason to go to war. Self-defense is legitimate under international law. It's absolutely lawless for any other reason, but of course people don't realize that, and they get incensed when they see these reports and hear these reports ad nauseum over and over again. Yeah. And I consider the corporate media complicit in criminality of the highest order.
They're part of the system.
They're part of the system.
They're advertisers. They're doing it for. I mean, it's the big corporations that own those papers as advertisers in them, and it's those same big corporations that are benefiting from the slaughters. what's, you know, I agree with you all about, you know, self-defense, and that's true under international law. Yes, yes. What's amazing to me as I'm observing it is that nobody thinks any other response is an action other than bombing. You know, well, actually, if you have this extreme phenomenon that has occurred overnight, it has been funded, and you know it's being funded in huge terms from outside itself and being armed in huge amounts by external forces. Why don't you track the money and the arms and stop that? If you have any cause-effect scientific thinking and you have an event being that everybody abhors, then stop the cause of the event, which is their funding, their orchestration, and their arming by external forces. Well, they can't do that. Nobody even mentions that. It's like that's part of the whole suspension of cause-effect relations themselves gets done in this trance. This post-hypnotic trance that the whole public is held in. Why does nobody even say, well, you have an event, you have an effect, which you disagree with good reason, then stop the cause of the effect, which is the arming, the funding, and the orchestration and the PR assistance of what's going on. Because it's huge, and it's all coming from external forces. These would be, you know, these are basically remnants of, you know, the Iraq outrage, you know, and you think of the whole karmic thing here. It's the whole Iraqi people coming back in the form of jihadic Muslim, jihadist Islam, coming back to wreak revenge, and wreak revenge it is, but all, you know, in a completely stupid way. Well, why not stop the cause? Nobody says that. Why? Because that would expose what's really going on. And that above all, ignorance above all, is our objective. And destruction of the society hosting the ignorance and we ourselves, the destruction of anything that reveals the ignorance, is above all to be annihilated. And so we go in this circle. It just goes round and round and round. The new twist here is that this is a brand new force that doesn't really have a social basis, and that you can just see them. I can see the guys planning, geostrategic logic and its procedures is something of great interest to me, and that they just plan it, saying this is the only thing that's going to work right now. And we got it on the ground, and we need it. We need such a force. Israel itself has said we got to have an enemy on our border, or we can't continue to expand. That's all part of a long-standing plan. What is that plan called? They got it, the Sinan plan. Any case. That it's a well-known plan since the 50s.
I agree with you totally, John. The worst thing that can break out in the Middle East is peace and stability, or any other part of the world that America has its eyes on, or that Israel has its eyes on. And the thing that keeps them going and supports their policy is violence and instability and insecurity. And when things are too quiet, they need to create incidents to bring about this violence. And that's exactly
because
what happened.
Once people have time to stop and think, they'll realize the world is collapsing around us. Everything's being destroyed. I don't know whether you read the latest report out of the World Wildlife Fund that already 52% of all life on Earth has been destroyed since 1970.
Well, I can believe it.
We're already past the tipping point of half.
Once
people stop and think about what's going on, so they can't stop and think about what we've got to have one spectacle after another, especially war spectacles, which will be of a benefit to the military-industrial complex and will metastasize the money sequences further and will override our declared enemies, meaning anybody who resists what you're doing. And war, perpetual war, is the only way this system can go on. And diagnostically, that's its nature as a macro cancer system.
And John, you have to really think, if the human species can destroy so many other species, isn't it logical to think at some point it could end up destroying itself?
It's destroying itself, clearly, but it's destroying other species faster. You just take them on the numbers, and it's destroying at the poorer end. Destroying, first of all, you destroy as having, they dehumanize. No human life left for the majority. Ever less of a human life left for the majority. It already happened. And then they find ways, the rogue vectors find ways of, but they themselves are just creatures of an insane system, a pathological system. They have found ways to save themselves. They, you know, if there's no air to breathe, they'll find a place to get air to breathe. They'll dig tunnels 200 miles deep to be free from the bombs and so forth. And so I'm afraid that those who cause it, are being relatively scot-free during this process, even when they visibly destroy the whole economy of the world, as Wall Street has done. There won't be anything. The worst that will happen to them is a small part of their profits will be, transferred back to the government, that's far less than the money they've taken. I mean, it's just impunity. Complete impunity. I think that's what drives people crazy, is the impunity of it.
Indeed, John. We're getting near the end of the program. I say many times, and I've written it, I really feel sorry for young people today, because when we were growing up, we had so much to look forward to, and it's an entirely different situation now in the West, in European Western countries, Eastern European countries as well, America, yeah. Canada. I mean, these opportunities are gone, and literally we face the prospect. I was never worried about Armageddon in the post-World War II era. I'm mutually assured destruction. I thought it saved us from nuclear war. But it scares the dickens out of me now that literally either by intent or by accident we could end up in a nuclear war that destroys humanity. It's not something that's way out of the realm of possibility. It's very much possible. I hope it doesn't happen, but it could.
Oh yes, indeed it could. In fact, the accident possibilities increase as we go. The end of human life. In a way, it's already happened in the last point you mentioned about the youth of the next generation. A human vocation, which is basically what we live for, to do something of value for others that is of interest to ourselves, that we give ourselves to in order to have a meaningful life, both for ourselves and others, that has been robbed from the next generation. There's almost no such jobs left. They've eliminated them all. There's only jobs for, some, a very small, ever smaller fraction. So in a way, the end of the human race is already far advanced.
I've got to wrap up.
Yes.
the band is about to start up any moment now, but I will say this. Before the program, I wrote an article. It's on my blog site now, Obama's Economy, and I go over in detail how we wrecked the economy and destroyed the future of young people in America. It's shocking, and it's a shame that most people don't realize it. John, I look forward to getting you back next month. There's always important stuff to talk about, and you are someone who really, really explains it extremely well to listeners. Many, many thanks, John.
Thank you, Steve.
Talk to you next month.